Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Things aren't always as they appear, and some bombshells might be hiding in plain sight. I'm Katie Bilotti, and this is Found Objects, a storytelling history podcast. Welcome in, everyone. Welcome back to Found Objects History Podcast with me, Katie Bilotti. Thank you guys for being here. And I have to say, the tea is piping hot in this episode, the historic tea. If you guys are interested in sibling rivalries of any sort, I mean, of course, there's a lot of famous siblings in the world. If you're interested in stories like that, or just any sort of story with like some drama, you know, woven throughout, you'll love this one because, you know, I'm not here to sit and talk about drama, of course. I do. I like the stories. I like history. But I think that this particular sibling duo is one that you might know of, but not know the deep intricacies of their relationship. You might not even know that one of the characters in our story has a sister, which is interesting. So this really, reading this story, not only am I just intrigued by anything that has to do with, you know, something a bit dramatic, something a bit, you know, under the surface of, you might not know the intricacies of something that happened so long ago because you know the facts, you know, maybe a big story or a big historic moment that overshadows all the rest of it, which you will know what I'm talking about in a few moments. But yeah, so vague, I know. But today's story is about a pair of sisters that had this deep rivalry. And we're going to talk about the lengths that they went to one-up each other. Anyway, without further ado, let's just get into it because I know I'm probably driving you nuts, not telling you who this is about, but I guess also the smart person in you is probably reading the title of this episode and then you know. But, you know, I think we just get into it, shall we? Oh, by the way, while this episode is airing, like when it drops, I'm in Paris. So, yeah, wave across the sea to me. Or if you're from Paris, come say hi, maybe in a not so creepy way, but you can maybe look out for me near the Eiffel Tower, probably. But yeah, I'll be in Paris when this episode drops. So I'm pre-recording this and the next episode as well. So no one goes hungry. Everyone's fed with content and I'm not stressed. So that is what we're up to. And I think we just get into the story, shall we? It's an interesting one. So, for many, a sister is a built-in best friend or a ride or die. Even if you don't have a sister and you're listening to this, think about someone in your life that you compare yourself to, that you love deeply or, you know, you're supposed to love, you have to love because of proximity or whatever, what have you, but you envy or you have this kind of unspoken rivalry with this person. Think about that because especially as, I don't know, I mean, I speak as a woman myself. I don't have any other experience as being anyone else. I think being a woman, being a girl even, and having a sister, it's this very unique bond that is just simply unparalleled, right? It's like you have this built-in friend, a ride or die, or a mortal enemy because, of course, girls, we compare ourselves, right? And especially the situation between or the relationship between an older sister and a younger sister is complex. I'm an older sister. My younger sister is 4.5 years younger than me. And, of course, we had kind of a tension-filled relationship in our earlier years just before we kind of figured out what we wanted to do with our lives and kind of got our footing and had our own personalities kind of develop. We had tension, of course, but at the end of the day, she is my best friend. She is my ride or die, and she knows me better than I know myself. So for some, that is the case. For others, you know, they might not speak to their sister. They might not have a good relationship. They might relentlessly compare themselves to them. I don't know. There's a lot of different directions you can go when it comes to a relationship between sisters. Whether or not you're close to your sister, you know that beneath the sibling love is an inherent sense of competition, I think of Serena and Venus, the Kardashians, Kate and Pippa, all defined by love and competition. It's a race to see who can do it better, faster, and longer. And again, you don't have to apply this to a sister relationship if you don't have one, but think about it in terms of having a close relationship with any person that you have known for a while that knows you better than you know yourself, quote unquote, but you have this deep rivalry with them, you know, and it's a race to see who can do it better, faster, longer, who can get the best grades, who can do the best in sports, who gets the better higher education, who gets married to the richest man. Perhaps the most famous rivalrous sisters in history are Jackie and Lee Bouvier, or more better known as Jacqueline Kennedy Onassis and Princess Caroline Lee Radziwill. To know them is to love them. Both were iconic in their own right and were the face of the American media for decades in the mid-20th century. But what many people may not know about this famous duo, about Jackie and Lee, is that at every crossroads for the sisters, the other was there waiting in the wings for the opportunity to do it just a little bit better. And truly, transparently here, I'm always, you know, one to admit when I don't know something, and I'm never going to shy away from that, even if people, you know, claim that I'm ignorant or whatever. I truly did not know who Lee Radziwill was until I stumbled across this show called Feud that focused on Truman Capote this past season. This season two of it focused on Truman Capote, and she was a character in it, and then from there, I fell down a rabbit hole of looking into her, and that was when I realized that she's related to Jackie Kennedy. So, yeah, and the story, guys, is just crazy. We're gonna get into it, but I just wanna say I didn't know who Lee was, and that's kind of telling given what you will find out in today's story, that I didn't know who she was. But again, could just be me living under a rock, who knows? But now that I know who she is, I will never forget her, and I am amazed by who she was. Anyway. So, Jackie and Lee. Jackie was born in 1929 and Lee was born in 1933. So, Jackie was the older sister, Lee was the younger sister. They were born into upper class America. Their family basked in the wealth and inherited fortune that came from crafting fine furniture, firewood distribution, and real estate dealings. They lived in an apartment on Park Avenue, one of the biggest buildings on the block that their real estate developer grandfather actually built. Goals. It's always like a goals moment when you hear someone lives on Park Avenue today or at any point in time. When they weren't gallivanting around the Upper East Side, the sisters were summering in the Hamptons, as all New York City socialite families do. In their free time, the pair of sisters could be found horseback riding, taking ballet lessons, and reading books outside of school. And their parents, John Blackjack Bouvier III and Janet Norton Lee, obviously, he's the third. I mean, whenever there's a number involved, you know there's some money, you know. Or I guess maybe that's a snap judgment, but that's what I think, at least. The parents, they were all too eager to distract their daughters and the public eye from their own rocky relationship. So the parents had this rocky, tension-filled relationship that was a source of much anxiety for the girls, for Jackie and Lee, but where they truly learned to rely on each other. Like, honestly, it was kind of like a trauma bond situation. The parents were fighting, the girls got closer because of it. You see, Janet, the mom, had good reason for distrusting her husband, Jack. Somehow, he managed to lose money on Wall Street in the 1920s, while everyone around him was striking gold and making it rich. They didn't call it the Roaring Twenties for nothing. It was a time of widespread prosperity in the U.S., so the thought of losing money in such contrast to the rest of society, quite frankly, gave Janet the ick. Also, because Jack did not act like a man who was losing his fortune, he lived this life of luxury regardless of the fact that he was losing money. He always dressed to the nines, he always had a chauffeur on deck at all times, like loved to spoil his kids and, you know, keeping up with the Joneses in a way on Park Avenue. But yeah, so Jack was all show. That's pretty much what you need to gather from this. Jack was the picture of a perfect man, but Janet knew the truth. His wife knew the truth. And yet, both of his daughters coveted the attention of their dad. They looked up to him as this role model for what a great husband looks like and a fashion icon, which some say is where the women got their passion for clothing at such a young age. But Jack had a clear favorite. His eldest daughter, Jackie, was his favorite. And I always am baffled by the concept of parents having favorites. I guess I don't know because I'm not a parent yet, but I just can't imagine like having a favorite child and making it so clear. Like, that's just so mean, in my opinion. But so it was clear to the family that Jackie was Jack, her father's favorite. Overly, it was apparently clear. And it could be because, I mean, I can assume that Jackie was named after Jack, her dad, like just given the names. But this was where the competition bloomed. Both girls used every opportunity in their childhood to one-up the other in front of their father. They both wanted to win the affection of him, who had the most prestigious social plans, who got in the best schools, who did dad love more? And for him, the answer was always Jackie. Again, so fucked up in my opinion, but that was the truth. However, the source of envy that was driving a wedge between the girls was relatively short-lived because despite his disastrous business dealings, Jack was also a deceitful cheat, and Janet had enough. She was a socialite at heart, and she knew she needed to find a new path forward to keep her girls and her family name in the limelight. So she filed for divorce in 1940. By 1942, Janet had gotten remarried to Hugh D. Auchincloss, what a name, guys. Auchincloss Jr., a New York stockbroker, lawyer, and most importantly, member of one of the wealthiest families in America. Janet was in heaven, of course, but the girls were struggling to keep their heads above water in their new life in those early years. They were newcomers to this blended family, as Hugh had three children from a previous marriage, so Jackie and Lee left their silly childhood rivalries behind them and once again kind of trauma bonded together to present a united front. In this time period, in the 40s, it was unheard of for a woman to divorce a man as their mother did, especially a member of a prominent family, so the divorce made the news. Their dirty laundry was plastered on the front page of all mainstream newspapers for months, and they were teased at school for their mom's unconventional choices, so the girls stuck together. In their teenage years, Jackie and Lee prioritized their education and continued to develop their social portfolios. While education and extracurriculars were important, it was more important to, ding, 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 find a wealthy husband in this day and age. Their mother, having endured one devastatingly disastrous marriage already, had high hopes for her daughter's prospects. She believed that Jackie and Lee had a lot to bring to the table, both individually and collectively, as part of a wealthy lineage, so the race to get married began. And it's kind of sad sitting here in 2024 thinking about how different things were back in the 40s and 50s and how important it was to race to the altar and get married and not really focus on the other things. I mean, granted, these girls did prioritize their education and whatnot, but it was kind of, you know, they prioritized their education so they could find a better suitor, you know, like they would place themselves in these positions so they would meet someone or, you know, be proclaimed this smart young woman that is fit for a man. You know, it's just different times. So at this point in our story, Jackie and Lee are friends, they're buddies, but it won't stay that way. Okay. To everyone's surprise, Lee, who was only 20 at the time, was first to the altar. She married Michael Temple Canfield on April 18th, 1953 at her stepdad's Marywood home. Michael was the adopted son of Cass Canfield, publisher of Harper & Row, or perhaps, we're not entirely sure, but there's a chance, he might have been the illegitimate son of the Duke of Kent. Many speculated that Lee didn't love him, and she just wanted to beat Jackie to the punch to get that ring first. And this may be the case, but it was also a business partnership in the making because Harper & Row became the official publishing house for the Kennedy family. Speaking of Kennedy, Jackie took her own sweet time finding John, or Jack, F. Kennedy. People in her inner circle started to worry that she had misaligned her priorities as she was hell-bent on focusing on her career. She was a curious and intelligent young photojournalist in Washington, D.C. at this time, and like I said, people were worried that she wasn't prioritizing finding a husband. Like, that was the worry that people had for her. Again, crazy that was like such a concern in this time because she was still young. But as it turns out, her family had nothing to worry about because had she not dabbled in the world of politics in Washington, she may have never met Jack, the very man who propelled her and her family to international stardom. Within 2 months of Lee's wedding, Jackie was engaged to the junior senator of Massachusetts, John F. Kennedy. He was handsome and well-respected, but also very wealthy, which helps. And as we know, he was on the political fast track, and the country expected big things from him. Lo and behold, he would end up becoming the Democratic Party's nominee for the 1960 presidential election against incumbent Vice President Richard Nixon in one of the closest presidential races ever. And then win. Jack Kennedy's political prowess translated to sexual prowess. He was a man on the move and was infamous as a playboy, but his senatorial role dictated that he have a high society wife. Jackie fit the bill perfectly. Plus, Jack's dad and the entire Kennedy clan loved Jackie, which encouraged him to move forward with an engagement. So, if you couldn't gather what I just said, or put it together, he needed to appear as though he had his shit together. And his family liked Jackie, so whether or not he was ready to settle down, didn't matter. He just decided to. So Jackie and Jack, fun that little name pairing, Jackie and Jack, and the fact that Jack was her dad's name, very interesting. Jackie and Jack wed on September 12th, 1953 in Newport, Rhode Island, and it was dubbed the social event of 1953. As Jackie relished in her newlywed life, Lee was becoming more and more unhappy in her own marriage. It became clear that she had kind of jumped the gun getting married to Michael, but despite her growing discontentment, Lee and Michael moved to London. It became obvious that he was a heavy drinker and, quite frankly, didn't make enough money to support Lee's lifestyle. They also struggled to conceive, so there was trouble in paradise in many different realms, to put it lightly. And this led to Lee having an affair with a Polish prince, an aristocrat, as one does. His name was Stanislaw Radziwill. He went by Stas, which effectively ended her marriage to Michael in 1958. So not great that she had to cheat her way out of that marriage, but it did give her the last name that we now know, Lee Radziwill. And the guy was a Polish prince and aristocrat. I mean, I'm sure that was enticing for a woman like Lee, who found that her ex-husband or her husband, I mean, at the present, was a heavy drinker and couldn't afford to give her the life she wanted. So she jumped ship and ended her marriage to Michael in 1958. Interestingly, though, it wasn't just a covert fling to fill some void in her life with Michael. Before long, the pair was married and they had their first child, Anthony, less than a year after their wedding. Unshockingly, her family had doubts about this new husband, Stas. Despite being a prince and despite making Lee happy, the family was skeptical of the optics of this marriage, especially when the family was under a media microscope since Jackie is now married into the Kennedy Empire. And then there was the fact that he was a much older man. Lee's mother, upon meeting Stas for the first time, said, "Oh my God, you're marrying an older version of your father." He also didn't have the level of financial stability that Janet expected for her daughter Lee, as his wealth had actually diminished when he fled Poland. You'd think that her status as a princess would impress her mother, but apparently not. Lee even stylized her name, which, it's a mouthful. Get ready for this. It's Her Serene Highness Princess Caroline Lee Radziwill, and was referred to as Princess Radziwill in the American press. Regardless of her mother's approval or not, which, I mean, at this point, it's like, imagine yourself in Lee's shoes. She grew up with her sister being her dad's favorite, and now her mom is questioning her choices. I mean, granted, she did cheat on her last husband, but you'd think her mom would be happy considering really all she wanted was for her kids to get these amazing marriages together, you know, and find these amazing husbands. So it is kind of surprising that the mom wasn't on board, that Janet wasn't on board. But regardless of this, Lee was happy. And perhaps more importantly, quote, she was now living a life that even Jackie might envy in a handsome house at 4 Buckingham Place, which is near Buckingham Palace, and a 17th century bakehouse called Turville Grange on roughly 50 acres of gardens, stables, and a courtyard, an hour's drive from London, which sounds absolutely fabulous. How could you be depressed in a place like that? But right on cue, as one sister starts to thrive, as Lee is doing well, the other starts to flounder, being Jackie. So it only makes sense that with Lee's new husband and new title, Jackie's relationship would start to crumble. To put it simply, Jack could not keep it in his pants. And it's funny saying that because Jack is my boyfriend's name. I'm like, Jack better keep it in his pants. No, Jack, as in John F. Kennedy, could not keep it in his pants. She grew more and more distraught as his political persona grew and he began his presidential campaign, and hence he got more ladies waiting on his doorstep. In the background, she was facing miscarriages and even gave birth to a stillborn baby, but many believe that she powered through because she took a European approach to marriage. She didn't worry about Jack's escapades if he continued to come home to her at the end of the night. So interesting, a European approach, quote, European. Interesting. She knew that she was invaluable to him and the Kennedy family, which was probably true, because remember I said, you know, to keep his public image, he needed, you know, this perfect wife, and his family adored her, so she was kind of indispensable. But despite his suspected affairs, Jack once told Lee himself, quote, I love her deeply and have done everything for her. I have no feeling of letting her down because I've put her foremost in everything. Well, not everything, Jack, not everything. So he remained astutely in the camp that he was never in the wrong. And for the better part of six decades, Lee has remained discreetly silent about her brother-in-law's revolving door of women, which included Marilyn Monroe. Yes, happy birthday, Mr. President, you might recall, Marlene Dietrich, and Judith Campbell Exner. Most likely, she kept this to herself to protect her sister's image, which isn't that what sisters are for? However, just when Lee thought that she would remain on top, she was a princess after all, like what could beat a princess, Jackie one-upped her again at the age of 31 when she became the First Lady. JFK won the presidency in 1960, as we know, and thus changed the trajectory of their lives forever. She was back in the spotlight following their transition to the White House in 1960, and Jackie remained largely hidden away during his campaign because the staff thought that she was too exotic and too high class to relate to the average American woman. But now that they won, she was free to spread her wings and accompany her husband on the global stage as the President and First Lady of the United States. And this is interesting to hear because, of course, now we know Jackie O as this style icon. And while she was First Lady, Jackie Kennedy, she was this, again, style icon. Of course, you know, she came from money, which is something to note and not extremely realistic or relatable for the American public, but you know, hiding her away is not, like, now we find out that, of course, like, she was this star, this shining light in the White House. So it is interesting that she was hidden away for much of the run before he got president. So anyway, Lee and Stoss did not attend JFK's inauguration. Interesting. The broadcasted story was that Lee had just given birth to a second child named Anna Christina prematurely. But the more widely believed story was that Jackie's accession to the White House promised to magnify a problem that Lee had to cope with for some time, the problem simply of being Jackie's sister. Although she was abundantly gifted herself, she had often been obscured by the shadow of her sister's prominence, and now that shadow threatened to eclipse her identity. How do you follow the act of the First Lady? Like, how do you do that? Well, you don't. Lee held her head high, acted like a sweet, supportive sister, and made herself known in the White House. Her entire family, children in tow, often spent a lot of time in the White House during JFK's presidency. She was a comfort in a world of unknowns for Jackie. And in fact, the White House staff have said that Lee's presence just made the energy in the residential suites more relaxed and low-key, which made a huge impact on Jackie. The role of First Lady is no small feat, so she was grateful to have Lee by her side. An unwavering sense of calm in the storm. And how big of Lee to be there for her older sister during this time, to put all of her envy aside and be the support system that she craved. It's worth noting that Jackie relied on Lee to accompany her on many travels during her time as the First Lady as well. We all know that Jackie was an international fashion icon, and after a trip to Paris in 1961, Time magazine christened Jackie, quote, the First Lady of Fashion. But what many don't know, and I certainly did not know this, is that Lee, Jackie's younger sister, had been instrumental in selecting Jackie's Givenchy wardrobe for this defining moment on the world stage. So Lee picked out a lot of Jackie's outfits that made Jackie into this First Lady of Fashion. So Lee was partially responsible. which I did not know. In fact, before that point in time, Lee often upstaged Jackie in her fashion choices. Lee got to wear Parisian designers, but Jackie was obviously encouraged to wear and support only American designers as a politician's wife. And one source that I found said, quote, "Jacqueline Kennedy had style, but she had a great deal of assistance and she had the best tutors. But Lee did it all on her own. She understands clothes. Lee could put on a coat and will know how to turn her shoulder and her head and her arm and hold the coat so that it's perfection." Fashion was always Lee's forte, her pride and joy. Yet here is Jackie stealing the show and being dubbed the first lady of fashion. You know, that must suck. For Lee, I mean, of course, it's like your sister, you love them, but you also, it'd be hard to not feel like there's a chip on your shoulder, right? It's like a working artist with hundreds of paintings getting overlooked at every gallery, and then someone accidentally paints something extremely so-so, and it sells for a record-breaking amount. Like, we've seen it happen like that, and that is a sucky feeling. So in an attempt to quell her disappointment in being overshadowed by Jackie, Lee turned to a friendship with Aristotle Onassis. And this was quite a decision on her part because Jack actively disliked and distrusted Onassis. Robert Kennedy, Jack's younger brother, regarded Lee's relationship as a betrayal of the whole family. But what's the big deal? Why do we care? Who is this Aristotle Onassis guy? So he was a Greek shipping magnate and one of the wealthiest individuals in the world during the mid-20th century. He revolutionized the shipping industry by pioneering the use of supertankers, large ships designed for transporting oil, among other things. A seemingly innocent rich guy, right? Wrong. Onassis had been sued by the U.S. government in 1955 for moving a fleet of ships that he had bought and promised to keep in U.S. waters, but he moved them. He ended up paying a measly $7 million fine. In an attempt to steer Lee away from Onassis, JFK requested that she accompany him on his European tour to Great Britain, Italy, Germany, and Ireland because Jackie, his wife, was too pregnant to join him. Lee called it, quote, "the most thrilling experience of my life." So he did this in an attempt to get Lee away from this guy that, again, she's married. She's a princess. She's hanging out with this other guy. Bad for business, bad for tabloids. And JFK didn't like him because he broke laws in America. So he was like, hey, come on this trip with me and get away from this guy. But she still went back to Greece to be with Aristotle Onassis when it was all said and done. And then Jackie ended up joining them. In August of 1963, Jackie sadly gave birth to a son, Patrick, who died 39 hours after birth. In an effort to distract her from the grief, Lee and Onassis invited Jackie to cruise the Mediterranean and enjoy some fine wine and sunshine, because, of course, fine wine and sunshine heals all. But what Lee didn't know is that Jackie was allowed to go only if she convinced Lee not to marry him. Nonetheless, the sisters cruised along the Mediterranean for a month and truly got the R&R they needed. If only they knew what was waiting for them just a few short months later. On November 22nd, 1963, Jackie accompanied JFK on a trip to Dallas, Texas. The Kennedys were riding in a motorcade through Dealey Plaza when, as we know, shots were fired, fatally striking John F. Kennedy. Jackie was sitting right next to him when it happened. In a split second, she lost her husband, lost her home, lost her status, and the dreams she had for herself and her family. Naturally, she was unraveling at the seams, but to the eyes of the public, she was navigating the grief gracefully. And when Jackie held the country together, Lee held Jackie together. The shocked and distraught American people said that Jackie brought a sense of majesty and dignity to America. Such a warm, beautiful sentiment, of course, but it was far from the truth. Lee was the consoling sister behind closed doors and was overlooked for her contributions to the Kennedy family and to America at that time. Jackie became depressed and suicidal, and she was inconsolable for weeks, which, can't blame her. I'm sure we can all visualize in our minds those iconic but deeply sad photos of her in that pink outfit, you know, with her husband's blood on her, bits of his brain matter. So Lee was helping Jackie and doing all she could, but one day, Jackie actually slapped Lee across the face when she was trying to console her. And Lee actually suspected that the violence wasn't because of her grief of the loss of her husband, but the grief of a life, of her life that she lost. like a, you know, how did this happen? How did everything turn out like this? It wasn't supposed to go like this kind of anger. In an interview, Lee said about the slap, the infamous slap that, you know, she would likely never, ever forget was, you know, because Jackie was, quote, so jealous of me. But I don't know if it's because I have Stoss and two children and I've gone my own way and become independent, but she goads me to the extent that I yell back at her and say, thank heavens, at last I've broken away from my parents and from you and everything of that former life. So it was kind of the breaking point between the sisters was the slap heard around the world, kind of reminiscent of the Oscars, right? Anyway, we often say things out of grief that are hard to come back from, and this is no exception. So then Jackie started to increasingly rely on someone else, not Lee, because Lee wasn't there anymore, on Robert Kennedy, Jack's younger brother. And he actually became a surrogate father to her two children. Post-assassination, Lee took advantage of her newfound freedom. Lee felt trapped while JFK was president, and now she was set free, free to let her true colors show. Having somewhat reconciled after the choice words set in a distraught state, so they actually did end up kind of reconciling. I mean, as sisters do, it's like, yeah, you can be mad for a bit, but, you know, you're siblings at the end of the day. So obviously you don't forget those things, but they kind of reconciled for a time. And Jackie and Lee bought apartments on Fifth Avenue back in New York City and remained close for their kids' sake. They tried to create a sense of normalcy by staying close to family, but in the background, Lee started to take back the spotlight. Lee began writing about fashion and culture in the Ladies' Home Journal. Then she befriended Truman Capote, an American author, playwright, and screenwriter. Like I said, the reason why I heard about her, and Truman is best known for his novella, Breakfast at Tiffany's, of course, which was later adapted into a successful film starring Audrey Hepburn, which I was her for Halloween just last year. And he's also famous for his groundbreaking nonfiction novel, In Cold Blood, published in 1966. And truly, Truman Capote really turned Lee's world upside down. You know, he was obsessed with her. Capote once said, quote, I can't think of any woman more feminine than Lee Radziwill, not even Audrey Hepburn. Lee knew that Truman loved her. And even though Truman Capote was gay and very much out of the closet, you know, she was spiraling out of control because her marriage with Stoss was ending, and it was nice to have someone caring about her. Second, Truman Capote wanted Lee to perform on stage, but Stoss was violently against it. So not only is her marriage kind of going south, but her husband's against this thing that could bring her joy, that Truman believed in her for, or believed in the fact that she could do it. Truman helped her to open a four-week run in a small theater in Chicago of The Philadelphia Story. Might have heard of it. YSL designed her costumes, so it was bound to be a beautifully executed production. The opening night was full of the rich and famous, but no Jackie. Shocker. The rumors were that she may have been jealous that her sister was following her dreams, dreams Jackie might have once had too. Jackie once actually said in an interview that she would love to act, and she asked the interviewer, do you think it's too late? Did Lee act because she actually loved it or because she wanted to be more successful or more famous than her sister? Classic. We're back and forth. We're ebbing and flowing here with the sibling rivalry. Fortunately for Jackie and unfortunately for Lee, the show did not go over well. It was beautiful aesthetically. I mean, they had YSL costumes, so obviously, but she was not a born actor. The reviews were not great, Lee said. It's difficult for someone raised in my world to learn to express emotion. We're taught early to hide our feelings publicly. Even though it kind of flopped, Truman Capote still believed in her. Her friend Truman encouraged her to try on-screen acting in 1968 in the film In Cold Blood, so the film adaptation of his book, but it also did not go over well. And this was a surprise because the book itself was such a smashing success. Some think, and given Truman Capote's reputation of honestly ruining women, if you guys have a chance to see this show, Feud, on HBO, the show that I referenced earlier, it's really, really good, but so sad the way that he honestly manipulated a lot of people. It's a very interesting movie, or not movie, it's a TV show. I won't spoil it, but anyway, people think that Lee Radziwill was just another one of Truman's victims, that, you know, he was in love with Lee, but because he couldn't psychologically handle that fact, he had to hurt her, which is so twisted and unfortunate. He set her up for failure time and time again. So naturally, after a couple of failures, Lee decided to take a step away from acting, which was actually in perfect timing because Jackie needed her. She needed Lee, even though, again, she wasn't there at opening night and they have this weird thing going on. Jackie desperately needed her sister because news of the assassination of Robert Kennedy came in 1968. So this other person that she was relying on, this family member that Jackie was relying on after the death of her husband, has now been assassinated as well. Except Jackie was about to throw everyone a curveball. So remember, I told you guys a little bit ago that Lee was hanging out with this guy, this Greek guy, Greek rich guy named Aristotle Onassis for a bit, and she wasn't allowed. Like, JFK was pissed and everyone in the family was trying to get her away from this guy. Well, surprise, surprise, Jackie secretly married him herself in October of 1968. And boy, did she succeed in shocking the world. Jackie kept it a total secret, and Lee was devastated when she found out. She was basically coerced into walking away from a relationship with Aristotle Onassis herself. Like, she, you know, was entranced by him back in the day, and the whole family kind of sabotaged that for her, and now Jackie has him. And their relationship as sisters never really fully recovered from that, which makes a lot of sense. Honestly, putting myself in her shoes, I would have a hard time forgiving my sister for that too. Even given like the fact that Jackie went through a lot of traumatizing things, losing a lot of loved ones, that's still so royally messed up. America was shocked that Jackie traded her legacy as America's widowed queen to marry one of the richest men in the world, a short, bullish man, reputed to be a pirate and a vulgarian, but many observed that Onassis was in fact immensely charming, keenly intelligent, with a deep knowledge of Greek mythology and human nature. Not only that, but he could protect her. He had his own security force. He could sweep her away on a yacht to be as reclusive as she wanted. It was finally a way for her to separate herself from the Kennedys and from the limelight. And Jackie was warned, if she married Aristotle, that the American public would take her off their pedestal. But she said, "I don't care. It's cold and lonely up there." Anyway, so the marriage to Aristotle Onassis is exactly what Jackie needed. Although she continued to call New York City home for her and her kids, despite the fact that her husband, or her new husband rather, never took up a permanent residence there. In retaliation, Lee, of course, back to Lee, it's a constant volley between these two. It's like a game of tennis. So in retaliation, Lee found herself a JFK of her own, a dear friend of Jackie's, Peter Beard. This affair ended her marriage to Stoss in 1974, finally. And so the love triangles between the sisters continued with Peter Beard. So Peter Beard and Lee moved in together, and during this time, Lee was crushing it. She flourished. But Jackie was as enamored with Peter as Lee was. She had already had Peter, the dashing photographer, tutor her kids in art history. So the sisters continued to haunt each other's love life. Quote, "like two trees whose branches kept getting tangled up, their shadows indistinguishable," observed an avant-garde filmmaker, Jonas Mekas. Nonetheless, Peter Beard cultured Lee. She traveled the world with him. She was on the cover of Warhol's Interview magazine and was hence introduced to the Andy Warhol crowd, hosted Mick Jagger and Montauk, and went on the Rolling Stones' 1972 tour. She even went on to help produce the Grey Gardens documentary, which was a huge passion project of hers. And Grey Gardens is a name of a very large house in the Hamptons. I've actually been there myself. I know the current owner of it, but she was working towards making this documentary about this house, and the reason for the ties, like the reason that she was tied to this home is the fact that, you know, she spent her childhood in the Hamptons and this house was linked to her. So she worked on producing this documentary, but poor Lee, who is always overlooked, didn't receive the recognition for this that she deserved. And it spawned a Tony-winning Broadway musical and an Emmy Award-winning HBO movie. But for some reason, she just didn't get the recognition for it. She didn't get the praise. So once again, Lee is gypped. You know, I mean, granted, she lives this life of luxury and money and never wanted, you know, but she still didn't get that recognition that her sister Jackie seemed to get so easily. You know, she was snubbed on Broadway and, you know, with her film debut, and now also with this directorial debut. So Enter the era of divorces. As I mentioned, Lee's divorce to Stas finally became official in 1974, and then in 1975, Aristotle Onassis began the process of divorcing Jackie. The rumor is that someone got in his head and convinced him that she was a bad luck charm. You see, Onassis, his son, died tragically in a plane crash, and he made the connection that her first husband died tragically as well. And then there were various other curses in the Kennedy family, or curses being like tragedies in the Kennedy family that you can read about. And putting all this together, putting these pieces together, he kind of came to the conclusion that Jackie was the common denominator in all of this. But he died before the divorce was finalized. Jackie ultimately got $20 million in the divorce settlement and another $6 million to cover inheritance tax. She was a rich, rich woman at this point, and in the years following, her inheritance from Aristotle had grown to $150 million under the astute guidance of her new companion, Belgian-American businessman and diamond merchant Maurice Tempelsman. In addition, she also reportedly owned an estimated $40 million worth of art, antiques, jewelry, and real estate. But she didn't live a life of luxury of a rich woman after his death. She finally took her life into her own hands. Following Onassis' death, she focused on her family and pursued various personal interests. She continued her lifelong passion for literature and worked as a book editor at Viking Press and later at Doubleday, where she edited and contributed to the publication of several notable books. I didn't know this part. Like, I didn't know that Jackie Kennedy, you know, after a couple of husbands, went into publishing and stuff. I did not know that. Additionally, Jackie maintained her commitment to cultural and historical preservation. She played a significant role in the restoration and preservation of landmarks like the White House, have you heard of it, Lafayette Square in Washington, D.C., and Grand Central Terminal here in New York City. But amongst all that, all these hobbies and things that she busied herself with because she didn't need money at this point, she continued to meddle in her sister Lee's life. In 1979, Lee came close to marrying again. It was a man named Newton Cope that she wanted to marry, but Jackie apparently thwarted that. She did something to derail that. And when thinking back on her relationship with Cope, Lee remembered him asking her, quote, "Why the hell are you so afraid of your sister?" He later said that it's too bad Lee couldn't get away from that sister of hers. Being just a few blocks away, it was like an unhealthy bond that she couldn't escape from. Lee was struggling, and by the end of 1979, she'd sold her Fifth Avenue duplex and bought a much smaller penthouse two blocks away at 875 Park. Later, she would sell that apartment and be reduced to renting or buying even smaller apartments. She sold a Francis Bacon painting at Sotheby's for $200,000. Just before the booming 80s art market, within a couple of years, the painting would be worth millions. So she sold at the wrong time and, you know, couldn't stay afloat in her nice mansion-like apartments she was used to. A stroke of seriously bad luck on her part. She was literally living the antithesis of Jackie's life at this time. After Jackie had inherited all that money and was, you know, pursuing her passion projects, Lee was struggling to nail down a guy that her sister wouldn't ruin and, you know, finds a place to live, you know? Lee's tides did eventually turn when she married filmmaker Herbert Ross, who made the films Footloose and Steel Magnolias, you might have heard of those, on September 23rd, 1988. In response to the marriage, Jackie said, quote, "I'm happy for Lee because she has stared into the jaws of hell." And that's just a funny quote because, I mean, of course, one has to wonder, with all of the things I've just shared, you know, wasn't Jackie kind of a part of that? Like, it kind of sounds like she was a big part of the problem. But then, by early 1994, Jackie, who was 64, was diagnosed with lymphatic cancer, and in a short time, it metastasized throughout her body. She died at her home at 1040 Fifth Avenue, surrounded by family, on May 19, 1994. When she first heard of Jackie's illness, you know, Lee could have kind of brushed it off, could have been stubborn, but she rushed to her sister's side. She put all of their differences aside and rushed to be there for her. And at Jackie's death, Lee wept inconsolably. Because despite their ups and downs, she loved her sister dearly. But get this, this next part is honestly so shocking and so twisted. So Jackie passed away, and of course, she had a will. And in her will, she transferred much of her money, much of her things, her assets and whatnot to her kids, with substantial cash bequests and valuable mementos to friends and family and employees, helping everyone, it seemed. Everyone got a little bit of what she had, except for Lee. Lee got nothing. Because, quote, it said this in her will, quote, "I have already done so much during my lifetime," end quote. Not even a memento was left for her sister, although Jackie did leave money to Lee's two children. How crazy is that? So even in death, Jackie's like, nope, none for you, Lee. Little sister, ha ha. Kind of crazy. I mean, granted, we don't know, you know, this is the story that we know that I've shared with you today. There's, of course, details that we don't know, that we'll never know, that things that happened behind closed doors that no one ever did an interview on, that we won't know. But it kind of feels a bit savage, right, that she did that. There are rumors, of course. Some say that Lee was part of JFK's revolving door of women. And Lee didn't know that Jackie knew of that betrayal until after her death. So this would definitely explain a lot of Jackie's odd behavior towards Lee. Like, we don't know this for sure, but there's a chance that Lee was maybe involved with Jackie's husband. So we're not sure, of course, if this is true. I mean, it's a huge, bold accusation, but some people theorize that that might be why. And, you know, Lee was known to be friendly, and so was JFK. So putting pieces together, but I don't think it's fair to say, like, this is what happened, because of course we don't know. But yeah, so perhaps, you know, her leaving Lee out of the will was out of revenge for having an affair with her former husband. We may never know the true scope of the story, but Lee is assumed to have struggled to separate her identity from Jackie's until the day she died in 2019, so not long ago. As you can see, the bond between sisters isn't always cut and dry or black and white. In fact, it's largely a gray area. Jackie and Lee is a famous sibling duo from history, and throughout their lives, there's this constant war between love and competition between them, a battle of which one will win in the end. If you ask Jackie and Lee about their relationship now, when it's all said and done, like, of course, they're no longer here to speak of it, but if they were, do you think they'd say their relationship was defined by building each other up or tearing each other down or secretly hoping the other one would fall? You know, it's just really interesting. It makes me want to text my sister and say, I love you. You know, stories like these of sibling rivalries, I mean, granted, they were so in the public eye that it must have been so difficult for them. Of course, they, you know, they thrived and they had money and all of that. But, you know, it's just kind of crazy that this rivalry that started at birth, you know, with Jackie being their dad's favorite and whatnot, just continued on. And it feels like there's some savage behavior on both sides in this story. But anyway, guys, text your siblings, tell them that you love them, and don't start unnecessary rivalries for no reason, because you might get left out of the will. That's something we learned from this. Anyway, guys, this is the story of Lee Radziwill and Jackie Onassis Kennedy. Thank you all for listening. And remember, guys, things aren't always as they appear. Goodbye. This episode was produced, edited, and told by Katie Bellotti. Research by Sarah Schilling. Podcast artwork by Siri Devlin. Follow us on Instagram at Found Objects Podcast. Tune in next Wednesday for a new episode. Goodbye.
Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Zaxby's just out Philly'd the Philly again. The Zaxby's Chicken Philly is back with garlic aioli, sautéed peppers and onions, decadent melty cheese, and your choice of Zaxby's signature crispy chicken fingers or delicious grilled chicken. But it's only back for a limited time, so enjoy it while you can. No pressure. It's just the greatest sandwich of all time on a ticking clock. Order the Chicken Philly today. Who's got the sauce? Zaxby's.